Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, here together with my co-host, Gina McAndrews. Hello, Gina.
Hello, Susan, and hello to our listeners. Thank you all for joining us.
I'm so glad you could be here today because you've worked with our featured guest, Marlene Ehrsmann, Executive Director of the Iowa Wildlife Center.
Yes, I have, and I'm glad we're getting our listeners to know more about the work that she's done at the center. She really does a tremendous job at taking care of a lot of different animals. But we also have some pretty interesting music previewing Central Iowa singer Mark Bailey, and he's from Bondurant. And he's going to be performing tonight at KHOI as part of our ongoing Panatorium sessions. These performances are live, and they're in our downtown storefront, simultaneously broadcast over the airwaves and the internet. And everyone is welcome to come down to the station here at 410 Douglas Avenue to catch the free show, or be sure and tune in and check out our featured artist. This takes place about 7 o'clock tonight on Wednesday. So instead of a rebroadcast of today's local talk, you can tune in to hear his live broadcast.
Tonight's musician has a new 6-song CD out from Nova Labs, the Ames recording studio owned and operated by Brian and Rachel Dudley. Here's a track called Lay It All on Me that also features boom musician Dean Erickson on keyboards. Was Lay It All on Me from the new CD by Mark Bailey, who will be playing tonight from 7 to 8 right here at the Pantorium. Our next recorded segment will be from nature reporter Pat Schlarbaum, who prepared this phonology in response to my question about the mountain lion that was spotted in Des Moines last week. He chose to report on another cat, one that is native to Iowa. Here's what he had to say.
Phonology is writing down nature's happenings on the date they occur. The day of specific events like the first butterfly of spring or the last flock of pelicans in autumn are noted in a journal for future reference and comparisons from year to year. Today's phonology is about bobcats. In the distance, two glowing eyes by the roadside suddenly darted through the beam of headlights and were gone. Was it real or simply an apparition? I asked my passenger, "Was that what I think it was?" And Diana Savin from Houma, Louisiana responded, "That was a bobcat. We've got a lot of those back home." And the bobcat at the side of the road was the first I'd ever seen. In many hours of tramping lowland river bottoms and steep hillsides of southern Iowa, I've only seen one other. Yet their population is increasing, like the recent cougar sighting in Des Moines. Cats in Iowa are making a comeback. Cat experts believe seeing even one bobcat in a lifetime is above average. Most Americans, campers, hikers, birdwatchers, hunters, and trappers included, never catch a glimpse of these elusive, nocturnal, native cats. Like all wild felines, they are extremely secretive and possess intense vitality. Considered one of the world's finest hunters, bobcats have been described as moving like a wraith on padded feet. Few animals have their gifts of keen eyesight and hearing. At the distant approach of people or dogs, bobcats will fade into the terrain like a puff of smoke. They move without weight or sound, a bundle of spring steel wrapped in gray that seemingly hates to be seen by humans, and will slip from view without a moment's hesitation. Therefore, bobcat tracks are commonly used to identify their whereabouts. Their tracks are somewhat smaller than a silver dollar. The ball pad is distinct from that of coyote tracks in that the front of the pad is two-lobed. Also, tracks are more rounded than those of coyotes or dogs and show no claw marks. The bobcat's razor-sharp claws remain retracted until needed. So similar to sandhill cranes reoccupying our wetlands and bald eagles nesting along numerous watersheds and river otters returning to Iowa streams, bobcats are making their presence known in woodland habitat of Iowa. A great deal of credit and thanks go to conservation organizations like the county conservation boards and others for their efforts to increase and improve forest lands in the state. Mature bobcats average 3 feet in length with a 6-inch tail, stand 15 to 18 inches high, and weigh from 15 to 25 pounds when mature. A bobcat's winter coat is more grayish in color than the black-spotted rufous fur it wears in summer. It has a distinctive ruff or side whiskers on its face and tufts of antenna-like hair on the ear points. And according to researchers, captive bobcats lose some of their keen hearing if these extended hairs on their ear points are snipped off. Bobcats have been elegantly designed to play their part in the scheme of life. Their fate and the fate of rabbits have intertwined during 40 million years of evolution. Predator and prey alike depend on one another for their long-term well-being. Rabbits serve to feed bobcats, and the bobcat's role is to weed rabbits, suppressing that population. The balance that exists between these animals is a dynamic one. When the rabbit population crashes, as it normally does, on a cyclical basis, particularly in the West, it is the rabbit that regulates the bobcat population, for without that important food item, bobcats have a difficult time raising their young. Very possibly, the Conservation Reserve Program, or CRP, since 1988, has played an important role in rabbit and rodent production in Iowa that could benefit bobcats in future years. Other foods taken by bobcats include songbirds, quail, rats, mice, grasshoppers, beetles, and reptiles like snakes and turtles. However, bobcats are not limited to small and easily taken prey. They have been known to stalk into a turkey hunter's range when the hunter is actively calling, and they are able to kill young deer and on occasion adult deer as well. This is most frequently accomplished when the deer is bedded down, unaware that it is being stalked. The bobcat inches carefully towards its prey, like a house cat stalks a mouse. Then it bounds forward and lands on the deer's neck and shoulders, and if the bobcat's teeth reach the deer's spine, the deer will be killed quickly. Accounts indicate if the deer is large and strong, it may leap up with the cat still on its back and bound through the forest trying to shake the cat off. And with luck, it may scrape its attackers off against a low branch. But more probably, the bobcat will ride the deer to earth, biting deeper and deeper into its neck. During severe winter storms, bobcats hole up and wait out the weather. Country folks may awaken on a winter night to the courting serenades of bobcats in distant woods or ravines. The caterwauling resembles the snarling, hissing, squalling, deep-throated growling, and high-pitched squeals of domestic cats at the time of mating, but with the volume turned up. Bobcats' pairs separate after mating, and in 63 to 70 days, the female bears her new kittens in spring. This continues year after year as long as the female lives, which may be 12 to 15 years. In his book, A Country So Full of Game, Jim Dinsmore states that bobcats occurred over most of the United States, southern Canada, and Mexico when Europeans first arrived. Bounties for killing wildcats date back to 1817. when Iowa was still part of the Missouri Territory. At that time, a bounty of 50 cents was paid for each bobcat killed. It remained at that level, 50 cents, into the Depression of the 1930s. Later, it was discontinued altogether as appreciation of the predator's role in nature was better understood. Basically, by 1900, bobcats seemed to have disappeared from most of Iowa, and there was almost no mention of them in the literature for a number of years. And a literature review in 1998 indicated that hunting and trapping exploitation likely contributed to the demise of bobcats in Iowa, but loss of habitat was a paramount factor. It's easy to accept the idea that bobcats could always be in Iowa, perhaps because we want them here. They are great ambassadors of wild areas that enhance our appreciation of natural resources and provide special qualities for our lives. Longtime career biologist for the Department of Natural Resources, Ron Andrews, would say, "It's wonderful to think that the bobcat, after being very scarce from the Iowa landscape for nearly a century, could be adapting to humankind and making a comeback. And as long as people have known bobcats, we have admired their tenacity for living. I've never seen one that had a look of fear in its eyes. These secretive predators represent an untamed entity that Iowans can hopefully enjoy and respect. Bobcat numbers are really improving, especially along the Missouri and Mississippi rivers and throughout southern Iowa, and that's pretty wild." And this is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio. Background music is John Barleycorn Must Die by Traffic. To support this station, go to our website, khoifm.org, and locate the donate button. This environmental update is sponsored by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, Story County's Conservation's Friends Group, working to enhance outdoor recreation, education, and conservation. Information can be found at oasco.org.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Local Talk, where Pat Schlarbaum, our nature reporter, has been telling us about bobcats, which is a great lead-in to our next guest, Marlene Ayersman, who's the executive director of the Iowa Wildlife Center. She's taken care of many animals throughout Iowa. Hello, Marlene.
Hello, Gina. How are you?
Good, thank you. So for those of who don't know, what does a wildlife center do?
Well, we have a three-pronged mission. And I've been here before, so it's always fun to come back and chat with you folks. And I love KHOI, so it's a really wonderful benefit to our community. So thanks for having me. Iowa Wildlife Center has three missions, three parts to our mission. One is to provide wildlife rehabilitation services for native wild species here in Iowa, to provide conservation education programming for the communities around us, and also to provide wildlife assistance skills training to the people who are interested in helping wild animals. So that means if people want to learn how to rescue animals or how to take care of them, come and volunteer with us, we provide the training to help people do that.
So where does this center... Where does all this action happen?
Oh, the action happens so many places. Right now we have an Ames office, downtown Ames, here on Main Street. We've been there for about 7 years now, but we own 75 acres of land near the Ledges State Park, just south of the Ledges State Park. And that's where we're building our facility on. And we've been building it by volunteer labor as funds come along. And so it's been a slow process, but it's been certainly a wonderful process. We've got some outdoor caging built, we'll be continuing work and finishing up that first building here this summer.
And if somebody wanted to volunteer, how would they do that?
They can find us in many places. One, they can go to our website at www.iowawildlifecenter.org, or they can, and there's lots of information there. There's even a donate button because we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization as well. So, or they can call us at the office at 515-233-1379. Or we have a big presence on Facebook as well.
And so what are some of the animals that you take care of?
Well, depending on the time of the year, that's kind of a hard question because every rehabilitator, we have to have a license by the state to rehabilitate any state-protected species. And then we have to have an additional license by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service if we want to work with federally protected species, such as our migratory songbirds or the federally endangered Indiana bat. So those are two examples. And so we have both the federal permit and the state permit. And we had to make a decision, as every rehabilitator does, what species that they're going to work with. And so primarily we decided that we would work with species of mammals of greatest conservation need. So that could mean your river otter and badger and things like that. Some of the mammals that other rehabilitators don't have the skills or the facilities or the experience and knowledge to take care of. And then most of the rehabilitators in the state take care of all the other more common species like your raccoons and your squirrels and your cottontail rabbits. And it's not that we don't appreciate them or don't care for them. It's just that when we have a certain capacity, a certain amount of funding, a certain number of volunteers that can help us, because it's really time, it's a huge time commitment to take care of these wild animals, and it takes a lot of money. So when we don't have that full capacity, we do have to limit ourselves. And so no matter what species we take in, we also have to look at how many of that animal that we take in. So for the mammals, for now, we're just saying we're going to try and restrict ourselves to some of the less common animals that the other rehabilitators can't take care of. We have raised several fox kits and coyote pups, and yes, we have taken in raccoon litter for a time or two, but those are not typically things that we take in. Things that we can offer is we're mammal. Certainly mammal lovers, but I have a personal love for another interesting mammal, which is the group of species in the bats. We have 9 species of bats here in Iowa, and that's one of my absolute favorite groups of animals. This last winter, so seasonally, again, it depends on the season. This last winter, we got in at least 120 bats from all over central Iowa. And those were of 3 different species, primarily big brown bats, but we also had an evening bat and a silver-haired bat. And they're fascinating animals. They're the only flying mammal in the world, and all of our bats are insect eaters, so they do provide huge services to us as far as their insect-eating capacity. And we had 3 public bat releases this spring then, once we got through the winter and insects. It's been a hard spring for a lot of animals. You know, the returning songbirds mm-hmm. are having a hard time finding insects and things. And the bats need those insects as well. But once the warmer weather hit and we saw insects out and we saw wild flying bats, then that was our cue to start releasing them. And at those 3 public bat releases, we had over 525 people join us for those. And so it's been really cool to watch the interest and respect of bats grow over the years. And people are starting to lose their fears. And that's what it takes for all of these animals, is for us to understand, like Patch Larbaum was talking about the bobcats. Once we start understanding the role of these animals in our surroundings and understand mm-hmm. how they relate to us and the rest of the animals around us, then it's much easier to have a greater respect for them and learn how to live with them. And bats certainly is one of those groups of animals that have been misunderstood for eons. So it's been really fun to share some of the knowledge about bats. The other group of animal that people don't really understand and often don't like are the reptiles, because I guess I love the unloved, but snakes, people just have had this love-hate relationship with snakes. We know they do a lot of good. They eat an awful lot of rodents and other pests, but people have had, you know, misunderstandings about them being slimy and out to bite us all the time and be all, they're all venomous. Well, they're not. We hardly have any of those left in the state. So, and turtles. Turtles, people think that you're either cute or they're ugly. So they're scaly and they're cold and much different than the fuzzy, cute little mammals that people seem to really adore. So I like to work with the turtles and snakes, and we've gotten several of those in. Turtles right now are crossing roads to lay eggs, or go from where they've been hibernating to where they're going to spend the summer, and getting hit on all of our roads that we have crisscrossing the state. So we have many that come in with cracked shells, and depending on where that crack is, if it affects their vertebra, which is attached to that top shell, is part of that top shell, then we can actually glue that back together and keep that turtle in captivity for usually about a year before it heals, and then we could release him back to the wild.
Wow.
So, yep.
What should people do, like, this time of year or during the winter if they find a bat in their house? Or?
Well, this time of year, if they find a bat in their house, they can just open up doors and windows and turn off all their lights and step aside. The bats are really good at finding that air current and will typically fly their way out. If for some reason the bat lands on the floor, and they usually have to crawl up something like a tree or your curtain to then drop down. Not all of them. Some of them can take a pretty good hop up, but they're not like birds that can just fly from a standing position. So we often have to help them, and you always wear protective leather gloves and grab a T-shirt or a towel or something and get the bat in that towel or T-shirt and take it outside and release it. So this time of the year, from spring through fall, we can just take them outside and they'll be fine. Wintertime, they won't survive the cold because their membranes, just like our skin tissues, their membranes get frostbite and they just succumb to the cold fairly quickly.
So what are some of your springtime animals?
This time of year, we're getting lots of calls. We've been getting calls for quite a while now about baby squirrels, baby rabbits, so those two really common backyard animals. One thing that we say is that before you trim up your yard, before you go out and trim trees and you look for squirrel nests, for one thing. A lot of tree trimmers have cut down whole trees only to find nests of baby squirrels, or sometimes things like screech owls in those trees. So we always recommend that people check their trees, check the hollows of the trees, check any nests to make sure that they're not active before they cut down the tree. This is home to the animals, and it's sort of our responsibility to pay attention to what's around us. And so do that. But if for some reason the baby squirrels do get separated from their mother, like by falling out of the nest or something, often you can just put the baby back in like a shallow cardboard box and put it at the base of the tree, and the mother will come back and collect her baby. We've done that. I've had tree cutters call us and say, we've cut down this tree and there's this nest of baby squirrels. What do we do? You want them? Well, no, I don't want them. Thank you. But we have enough, and mothers do a much better job raising their young than we do. So they can put the whole litter of baby squirrels in a box and put it on the stump that they have just cut down, and the mother will often come back and get them. And we've done that with raccoons. We've done that with, you can reunite many, many animals, and it's even baby birds is another thing we're getting calls about right now. And it's an old wives' tale that animals won't take care of their young if they smell human scent. That maternal drive is huge, just like it is for humans. And so you can pick up that animal safely, depending on what species it is, and put it back in the nest. If it's a baby bird, definitely you can get them back in the nest. Baby rabbits, check your yard before you mow. Walk your yard and make sure there aren't any rabbit nests. They're really shallow depressions in the yard, covered with dried grass, lined with mom's fur. And so it's easy for the low lawnmower blade to stir up that nest. So raise your blade a little bit during this time of year. It's hard on the lawn, I think, to cut it short anyway. So raise your blade up a little bit. Walk your yard. Put the bunnies back in the nest if it gets disrupted by you or by your dog, and cover it back up. And moms come back. Mom rabbits come back morning and night. That's it. She leaves her babies alone the rest of the time. So people get concerned about, oh, I don't see the mother taking care of her babies. Well, the mother rabbit, it's been designed that way to keep her babies safe, that she only comes in a couple of times a day to nurse them. Mm. So those are just tips that we try and give people when they call.
How about when people find turtles in the middle of the road?
Oh, that's a good one. And because, like I said, they are crossing the road quite a bit right now. So, indeed, turtles know where they're going. We always think we know better, but these animals know where they're going. And so when you find a turtle, you can pick it up. If you can safely do it and not get hit yourself, you can get off the side of the road, pick the turtle up, and if it's a painted turtle, something like that, that's easy to pick up. Just make sure that you don't put your hand in front of its beak because they can bite and will bite in defense. But pick it up and take it to the side of the road and to where it was traveling. You know, if you see a pond and on the other side of the road and you think that's the better place, don't do that. Just watch where the turtle was headed and take the turtle there because they know where they're going. If you take it back across the road thinking, oh, that's where it should be, the turtle will turn around and cross the road again and put itself in danger. So help it go to the direction it was wanting to go. Snapping turtles are another harder issue to deal with, but they're certainly out on the roads quite a bit.
And what's your secret remedy? I know I was with you one day when we found one. And
Yep. So
I thought it was a great idea.
Yeah. So everything, you know, snapping turtles don't have much of a shell on the bottom, and so they evolved to bite. So people think they're mean and vicious. Well, they're also just protecting themselves. So, but they do have a very long neck, and so you have to be extra careful with snapping turtles. So what you do, everyone has a car mat in their car. So that's a perfect tool. If you can get the, you can have the snapping turtle bite onto a stick, and they will readily do so, and get that turtle up on the car mat. And then we always grab the tail. We never pick a turtle up by the tail because that's connected to their spine and can actually dislocate and fracture their spine. So, but we control the head of the animal by grabbing the tail, and then we drag the car mat across the road with the turtle on it. And so in the direction in which the turtle was going. So that's just a really handy tool that everyone has in their vehicle to keep them safe from the snapping turtle's mighty jaws.
Wow, you're sure doing a lot of great work and have a wealth of information. I'm sure all this takes a lot of time and energy and as well as money.
It does. And we have a really great volunteer group of people, and we have a new volunteer coordinator starting this week. People can sign up to help us out. We have an application on our website, again, at www.iowawildlifecenter.org. So people can fill that out and send it in. We do have a commitment that we require of at least 3 months, depending on the season, because it takes a long time to train people, and we have a 10-hour training school that we require as well. So, and then they can also donate through our website or donate through Facebook as well.
And I think you're having a big fundraiser, I believe, Friday, November 1st?
Yeah, that's our gala, and we're for the second year now, we're having it down in Ankeny at the DMAC
FFA
Enrichment Center. That's right. It's a beautiful building, and we've got the caterer all lined up, and we'll have silent and live auction, and we just have an awful lot of fun at those. And that's our big fundraiser of the year, and you know how that goes. It means an awful lot to get the right funds in so you can continue to do good work.
And what kinds of volunteers can you use? If people say they don't have time to work with the animals, are there other ways people can maybe help with the building or?
That's a really good question. And yeah, some people don't, I mean, a lot of people want to work with the animals, and then they realize, oh, there's lots of, well, poop to clean up, and there's lots of food to prepare. I mean, it's daily, you know, cage cleaning and diet preparation. It's just daily, at least once a day. So there's people start getting less, it's a less romantic idea once you get into it. So there's lots of other things to do. And so people can help me out in the office with database entry and many, many other things, organizing the office, which is always in a state of upheaval. But we do, as I mentioned before, the building out at Wildway, we do, and our caging, we have need of people who want to help by using their hands in building we have building weekends so we can build cages. We are going to be working on the building again, on the interior of the building as the summer goes along. So, yeah, there are a lot of different things. That 75 acres also needs lots of stewarding. And so we just planted 10 acres to native prairie, and we've got a wonderful savanna and wetlands that we're recreating. So the land itself needs invasive species removal and many other things. So there's lots of ways to help if you just believe in our mission and want to get your hands dirty once in a while.
And as far as the building, what yet does that need? It needs electricity and...
Mm-hmm. We've got the electric plans drawn up, and so we'll be bringing electricity to the building and installing that system. So the mechanical and electrical is the next big project, then there will be the insulation that needs to go on. This is a steel arch building, this first building, and it was put together bolt by bolt, section by section by volunteers. It's been an incredible project. It's 40 by 100, so it's not a small building. So once the electrical and mechanical are installed, then we can insulate it, and then we can build our interior office space and go from there.
Well, that sounds exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's a really fun project. Lots of fun people come our way, and we try and make it fun because, frankly, what we do, there's a lot of death involved. You know, these animals come in sometimes with really pretty morbid injuries, and so sometimes we cannot save them. We work closely with Iowa State University Veterinary Medicine, and we have several cooperating veterinarians that work with us. But even all those life-saving actions are not enough, and sometimes the most humane thing to do for these animals is to euthanize them. So we deal with at least as much death as we do life, and so we try and make everything else as much fun as possible and build community within our small organization.
And I remembered recently you had a dead cedar waxwing.
Yeah,
we did roaming cats.
Right. I had this young man quite distraught come in. We were just wrapping up the day this weekend, and he came to the door with a wastebasket. And in this wastebasket was this beautiful cedar waxwing, and it wasn't flying up. It wasn't escaping, and that which was my first clue that something was terribly wrong with it. And the young man said that his cat had who he allows outside, had got it. And we had to euthanize that cat or that bird, because, which is a native songbird, because the injuries were just too extensive. And so this time of the year, one thing people, we have a leash law here in Ames, so people need to keep their dogs and their cats confined on leash, and they have got these catio designs now for cats that I think are really cool, so the cats can go outside, but they're confined in their own safe space, so they're not out getting hit by cars or picking up diseases from other animals and other free-roaming cats. So keeping your cats confined is really important, whether you're in Ames, which is the regulation, or outside of the city limits.
Because what kind of damaged or negative impacts can these cats have?
If you think about the native cat that Pat Schlarbaum was talking in his phenology calendar this morning, and that cat evolved with our native populations, but the house, and they don't number, you know, we don't have a lot of bobcats, even at their greatest populations. And so, but the domestic cats, there are huge populations of them in the state and throughout the nation, and they have been known to have an amazing negative impact on especially our bird species, killing millions of birds every year. But they also have been known to kill reptiles, and go back to the reptiles, but lizards, endangered lizards and snakes and things. We've always had cats, and when we used to let them, we don't have them anymore, but when we had them, they were indoor-outdoor cats, and they would always bring us what we used to call kind of jokingly gifts. You know, they'd always drag baby bunnies in or birds or snakes or whatever. They are supreme hunters no matter how much they're fed. People think, well, my cat won't do any harm because it's well-fed, and that's not true. They're just designed. They're amazing, amazing hunters, so you have so many of them out there on the landscape, and they're having that really negative impact to our native populations of animals.
So we really need to help people understand to try and keep these cats either inside or on leash so they reduce.
Yep. There are a lot of fun things now to contain cats. So now I see a lot of my friends, some of them have those bubble backpacks. They take their cat cat to the farmer's market in. They have wagons designed that they can haul their cat around. They put them on a leash, take them for walks. They can be, these cats can, they're not stupid animals. They just are very independent, and it's a different thing than training a dog.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And again, we're having that fundraiser November 1st.
Sure. I can come back and talk about that as time approaches if you want me to.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We have Marlene Ayersman with the Iowa Wildlife Center.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and Gina McAndrews and I have been your hosts for today. The first part of the program is devoted to wildlife. Now, as promised, we have another song from our Pantorium Sessions musician Mark Bailey performing live in our downtown Ames storefront tonight from 7 to 8 p.m. This one is the title track from his new CD, True to Life, and also features Ames musician Will Pett on cello.
Around on hollow ground, filled her lungs in old Colorado. Boats laid to rest in piles like giants had lost all their marbles. Scattered ashes in the wind, to the top to take it in with you. And only life can buy you moments like these. But only life bring you to your knees. Streets are filled with screaming men, caught up in the crossfire of devil. Barely lived to tell the tale. Drank it down, we drank our fill and then some. Maybe in another life I wasn't as lucky as right now. And only life can buy you moments like these. Only life can bring you to your knees. Yes, only life can buy you moments like these. But only life can bring you to your knees.
That was True to Life by Mark Bailey, performing live tonight at our studio as our May Pantorium Session artist. Please stop on down and join us. It's from 7 to 8 tonight, and everyone is welcome to attend.
Switching from nature to politics, we have an announcement of an event at the Ames Public Library this evening from 6 to 8 p.m. You may have noticed that this is at the same time as Mark Bailey at the Pantorium Session. But we have different listeners with different tastes. To help us make the decision of which we're going to do, we have Ryan Mulcahy from the National American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, with us today to tell us about Rights for All, the workshop being held at the Ames Public Library tonight. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
What is the purpose of this campaign that you are launching tonight?
The ACLU is currently working on a new campaign for them. It's called the Rights for All campaign. And with what we're doing is, with all this action that's happening here in Iowa right now around the presidential caucuses, with what's going on in the other early states out in New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada, we're trying to make sure that our next president is committed to protecting and advancing the civil liberties and civil rights that are guaranteed to all of us. And it's up to us to make sure who's running is actually being held accountable for these key issues. We're really trying to elevate civil liberties and civil rights, bring it to the forefront of the conversation with presidential candidates, and ultimately, at the end of the day, get a recording of them actually responding to the issues. And to be explicitly clear, we're doing this in a nonpartisan manner as well. The ACLU will never support, endorse, or oppose a candidate. We're here for the issues. We're here to try to make sure that everyone's rights is laid out. Our Rights for All campaign, we're really focusing around four intersectional issues. That includes voting rights, reproductive justice, criminal justice reform, and immigration rights. And part of what we're doing today up in Ames, or rather later on this evening, is we're hosting a direct candidate engagement training with some of our supporters up there. It's open to the public. So I strongly encourage anyone who wants to come out, learn a little more about the Rights for All campaign, how to engage with presidential candidates, to come and join us. We'll have some food. It'll be a good time. Really, what we're trying to give to the community is these skills, that really important skills that we can use to interact with our elected officials down the road.
Well, here at KHOI, at least one of our DJs has been working with you, Merle Crabb, whose show Merle on the Move airs at 9 to 10 p.m. on Saturday night. And he's already had one interview. And do you have any others lined up for him?
So Merle got the interview with Julian Castro all on his own. That is not coming through the ACLU. But he has also attended a number of candidate events. For example, he asked Marianne Williamson about voting rights and Cory Booker about criminal justice reform.
Well, he told me that he has gotten several interviews, and I'd like our listeners to know that these will also be available on our website because, of course, his show is live, so normally you don't hear rebroadcasts of it. But the interviews are being pull those out, and you can go to candidates' website to hear them. And also, of course, airing it from 9 to 10 on Saturday night is a very different audience than we have on Local Talk, for example. So he's really doing a community service to provide these. Thank you for whatever training that you have been giving to him.
Yeah, and you know, it's Merle's going to be there tonight. I once again strongly encourage you guys to join us. These issues are important. They affect us, our families, our community members. So we want to make sure that these candidates, no matter who they are actually thinking about them and that the public knows and cares about them.
Well, thank you for what you're doing and for this event, which will take place from 6 to 8 tonight at the Ames Public Library. And you and Merle, and sounds like a fun time for people who are interested in politics.
I think it will be.
Thanks a lot. Goodbye.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks. That was Ryan Mulcahy from the National American Civil Liberties Union with Rights for All. And
before we leave today, Maggie Westvold has come in with a couple of poems that will tie up today's show. Hello, Maggie.
Good morning, Gina. Thank you. When Susan called up and asked would I like to come by with some poems, I went thrashing through the stack, and I decided to share a lighter prose poem. This, when I read this, it'll probably just sound like prose, but that's the nature of prose poetry. But this one I chose because I wrote it about 10 years ago, but it recently took on a life of its own, and I have a little story that goes with it. It all has to do with my being a fan of John Lithgow for many, many years. I'm going to read you the poem, and then I'll tell you the little story that developed this winter. Dear John Lithgow, I reached midlife free of a silly celebrity crush. Unless I admit to that brief 60s fling, George Harrison, I only decided I should like George because of all those giddy girls I was so embarrassed for their screaming lack of self-control, good grief. Fainting over John Paul, even Ringo, shaggy shrimp of percussionists. George seemed lonely and needy. I had to. It was a short-lived, quiet affair. Not one scream. I told few, not even George, and then I let him go. Crushing wasn't my color. 30 years pass, quite nicely. Then along comes you, playing that young and needy banker, coming all unglued each time one sensuous, albeit married, brunette approaches your teller window. I left that theater, John, wishing with every fiber of my wifely being that your fictitious bank sat just around the corner, that I could line up at your make-believe teller window for some serious message-bearing eye-batting, hand you the note lovingly scripted on pearl-pink linen. Come with me, John, calmly and quietly. Years fly by with my fleeting thoughts of you, then suddenly, shrunk to fit black leather pants on third rock's leading man. Gulp. Black leather caressing your adulterous banker body did not one thing to calm my still happily married heart. Your show's cancellation after not many seasons may have saved my rock-solid marriage, though I puzzle yet that those huggy black leather pants did not garner higher ratings. Years pass peacefully. Life is good. Happily married wife and mother finds more time for love of poetry. Looks online for a much-loved, just-not-dog-eared copy of Seamus Heaney poems. Up pops you on my screen, John. Same smoldering smile graces the front cover of your own collection of your favorite poems. I try to contain my mere months from Medicare moan. And I forget about Seamus Heaney. John, John, we are poetry soulmates. You're back, John, you're back. I've missed you. And John, I truly did not mean it when I said, dear John. Okay. Now that is the silliness that was my poem from 10 years ago. To kind of sum up my thing with John Lithgow. And a poetry friend of mine from Ames, Robert Strawn, remembered that poem. And this January, he emailed me. And out of the blue, I get this email. And he said, I wonder if you would care to email your poem about John Lithgow to a friend of mine, Roger Bertelsen. Roger's son's a film producer. One of his films, starring John Lithgow and Blythe Danner, it's called The Tomorrow Man, is being put on at Sundance Film Festival next week. When Roger told us he's going, I mentioned your poem. He said he will be meeting Lithgow again and would like to give it to him. I told him I'd ask. So, if you're so inclined, here's his email. So, I thought, what the heck? So I emailed my poem to Roger Bertelsen and said, if you are so inclined and if you get the chance, thank you. So I heard back from Roger, who said, thanks for sharing your wonderful poem. My wife and I met John Lithgow first in 2017 on the set of Tomorrow Man, the movie that is being premiered now. We met him because our son Nick is one of the producers. Nick introduced us to John and co-star Blythe Danner. They were both friendly and chatted with us at a couple dinners. So, and so on and so forth. So he has my poem in hand. That was January 20th. of this just this past winter. And on February 1st, actually it was January 31st, in my email inbox is an email. Dear Ms. Westfold, Ms. Westfold, in the crazy crush of Sundance, I've lost track of who handed me your poem. It is delightful, funny, and extremely flattering to my battered ego. Many thanks, John Lithgow. That's a prize, folks, for a little little lady from Midwest, the Midwest, a poet who never, I don't even send poetry in for publication much at all. So that was fun to get. So I answered him and thanked him profusely and told him it was Roger Bertelson from Ames, father of Nick, who had handed the poem off to him and thanked him. And he wrote back one more time and said, of course, Nick is one of our producers. I think you will love the film and best regards. So
that's terrific.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty nice to be recognized. Well, first of all, to have Bob Strawn remember that poem from 10 years ago. That's at the time he said to me, you should try and get that to John Lithgow. And I said, oh, that would be dumb, I think I said. But he said, no, you might be surprised. And so that's how that little thing evolved. And it was lots of fun. And I think... it probably is going to be my big splash in my poetry career. I have on record a recognition of a poem from someone like John Lithgow, who I still follow. I've always enjoyed his acting, and he does have a book of poetry out. It's a beautiful book. It's his favorite poetry. He was always, his parents read poetry to him, his father mostly, and on the facing page of the poems is his memoir about how he came to love that poem. It's beautifully put together. So it's a nice book if you're so inclined. That's my little poetry thing this morning. Thank you, Susan, for inviting.
Oh, well, thank you for having this wonderful story and poem and actually a film review as well.
Yeah. Right.
All here on KHOI. I'll bet that's a one of a kind anywhere. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That was Maggie Westfold. Thanks so much. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Franzen and Gina McAndrews. Other voices you heard were Pat Schlarbaum, Marlene Ersman, Ryan McCahey, and Maggie Westfold. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon. At 7 p.m., you can listen to Mark Bailey at the Pantorium Session, which will be broadcast live. But you can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. Local Talk was engineered by Aladdin Al-Katheri. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Lay It All on Me and True to Life by Mark Bailey from his CD, True to Life. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you on the radio. Funding for KHOI is provided in part by Northminster Presbyterian Church, presenting their 2019 Vacation Bible School Marketplace, 29 AD, an opportunity for experiential learning. Children from preschool to sixth grade are invited to visit and interact with a recreated marketplace from biblical times, June 16th to 20th. Information and registration forms are found at www.amesnpc.org. That's www.amesnpc.org.